Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And we are off and running on this, the 15th day of February, 2017. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and be instantaneously greeted by the likes of Anatole Dowhead, Don from Central PA, Jug of Punch, Jules, King of Cups, and Stockton Larry, all capably moderated by midweek moderator Steve from Georgia Stan. Welcome, welcome, one and all. You will enjoy yourself should you decide to pop in. And, I'm there too, so wander on by. This is a, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Okay, that's out of the way. Check that little box off. This is a listener-supported broadcast. We are at midweek and mid-month at the same time. And we find ourselves $450 behind in fundraising, $200 for this evening, and a deficit of $250. It would be more than that, save for the good efforts of our subscribers. That's what makes the subscriptions so very important. We had a subscription challenge on the table, courtesy of Joan in Talibandiana, and nobody. Took her up on it. She was willing to boost new subscriptions by $50. And folks just said, nah. So that's pity. That's a darn pity. But nonetheless, we could be in worse shape. And I want to send out thanks subscription-wise to Harold. As well as to Bob and to darn it, no name associated with that. To Darlene, thank you, Darlene, in Connecticut, and thank you again to Timothy. Thank you all very kindly. You have made our deficit less than it otherwise would be. If you'd like to become a subscriber, and perhaps I could even, we might even cajole Joan into re-upping that challenge. I don't know. I can't speak for Joan. But if you would like to become a new subscriber, just click off the little box there at the PayPal interface at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute that says make this a recurring monthly donation, and you'll be in, you know. $10, and that, like I said, I cannot overstate how important our subscribers are, because they make up the difference when we lay the occasional goose egg in keeping all of this going. So thank you to all of our Horn subscribers. Thank you, one and all, so very, very much. And so we're looking for, one at $450, two at $225, four at $112.50. Eight at 56 and a quarter. And after that, we start rounding and, you know how it goes. But that's where we are. That's where we are. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, Boss Man Wayne always loves to get mail. And that can happen at, the mailing address, checks and money orders made payable to The Horn, not Bob Kincaid. I never see it. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318 Beckley, Beckley, WV25801. So thanks, everybody, and hopefully we'll knock some of this down this evening, and we won't find ourselves, like, you know, at the end of Friday going, holy Jesus! No, we won't. It is, of course, Wednesday, the 15th day of February, as I noted. Middle of the week, downhill to Friday, hump day, as it were. But it's also, of course, prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn, brethren and sistren. There's so much other news that I almost hesitate to give pride of place to religious insanity to this evening. But we will, because, I mean, there's some good stuff. Well, I mean, there's some you can't make this stuff up stuff. And it has its own value, especially in light of the fact that noted world psychopath Bibi Netanyahu is in Washington. My God, wasn't that a press conference for the ages today? Bibi and Comrade Kumquat. Yeah, I know. But it's prayer meeting Wednesday. And so, brethren and sistren, I got to tell you, I can't tell you whether fellowship dinner was any good or not. I mean, we can go on past practice and past performance and use that to extrapolate into the present and the future, because the little old blue-haired ladies never mail it in. But I didn't partake. No, they had me a nice cold bottle of water, and I sipped at it judiciously while everybody else took a run at the meatloaf. Oh, they do a good meatloaf. Oh, it smelled so good. And God, those mashed potatoes just all made golden by the butter that was worked into. Oh, and the steamed vegetables, they got tossed around in a little bit of bacon grease in an iron skillet. And the worst of all, of course, was the icebox cheesecake. You know, not the stuff you bake, the kind that just sets up in the oven. It's good. You know, you make it in a hurry, graham cracker crust, lemony, light, fluffy, yum. The Jell-O kind. It's a hillbilly thing. But it was good. I know it was good. I know it was good because I couldn't have any, brethren and sistren. But, I know it was good because it disappeared so damn fast. Mm-hmm. And as quick as there wasn't so much as a crumb left, man, the deacons were up the stairs and out in the parking lot smoking with the sinners, brethren and sistren. Until that is, that moment came when Sister Carol Baker appeared at the vestibule doorway with the Cathedral of Common Sense solar-powered cattle prod in hand. And I tell you what, they learn. You know, that's, you can say this much for the deacons. They learn and stay learnt. And they applied shoe leather to parking lot, and they were through that door, past that bowl of desiccating butter mints, and on down front here where they're waiting with the big, heavy brass, velvet-lined offering plates, which they will now move about the congregation and begin to pass back and forth and back and forth. And, well, there's a little PayPal button in the bottom. Just press it, okay? And Brother Deacon Asa tells me that if folks come forward, the first $50 is on Brother Deacon Asa. So $50 gets your $50 doubled, takes us down to $350 to go. So don't leave Brother Deacon Asa a flapping in the breeze, please. So let's call up the Minister of Music, shall we, brethren and sistren? Because we're always up for a little song. Let's call up the Minister of Music, and with every head bowed and every eye closed, brethren and sistren, except the one you keep a little bit cracked open so you don't get your head cracked with a big, heavy brass offering plate. Every head bowed and every eye closed, we're going to call the Minister of Music up. Glory. to lead us in our offertory hymn. Amen. Hallelujah.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen!
Let me hear you say,
Praise the Lord!
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang. I love you. Welcome, brother and sister, and welcome. Welcome to Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Ha, glory. I may be a little off in my delivery this evening, for I feel as though I've been pierced through the side, just as was our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Amen. But I'm still a calling on you, brethren and sisters. I'm a calling upon you now. I adjure you to get up out of your seats and onto your feet and wiggle and waddle and scooch and squish and screech. And get out into that center aisle and come on down that blood-red aisle and fall upon your knees at the altar. Oh, glory. Lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense a-flowing through you. Oh, glory. From the server on high. I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Bob Kincaid. And it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn, brethren and sisters. And I tell you what, many of you, like me, may have been trying to make some sort of horse sense out of just exactly what's been a-going on up there in Gomorrah on the Potomac. You know, Washington, D.C. What was it that happened to that good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical General Michael Flynn that forced him to have to step down as the trusted ally and advisor and guardian of our national security? What was it? I didn't realize until I took it to the Lord in prayer, and he directed me to the words of Rick Wiles. Rick Wiles Well, he has the answer. And he told it to everybody on his radio program. Oh, brethren and sistren, when you realize what's going on, you ain't gonna be all right.
Hillary Clinton's telling us up front what this is all about, guys. She's telling us.
Yes, I'm reading her tweet right
now. She's bragging. It's about Pizzagate. She's telling them, we took you down. You dared to talk about our filthy child molestation ring, and now we took you down. That's what she's saying today. This is about people such as General Flynn and others who are aware that there is a criminal cabal running this nation and much of the world. And I don't know whether General Flynn comprehends that they are devil-worshipping, Luciferian, demon-possessed maniacs. But he does know they're child molesters. He does know that they're criminals, that they're involved in child trafficking, child molestation, child rape, child murder. He knows it. He knows it. You can't be in that position of power and not have information about these people. And it's coming to light. And WikiLeaks exposed just the tip of this dark, evil system. And General Flynn's aware of it, and others are aware of it, and it's coming out. And if it ever comes out in a fullness that the average person on the street sees it, hears it, understands it, there will be mass vomiting in the society. When people find out what these demon-possessed rulers have been doing for decades with children, the children who disappear, who are kidnapped and disappear, the children that are easily kidnapped out of third world nations.
Yes.
Nobody even knows.
Yes, that's
I mean, you get them in the jungles in the Amazon and Africa, they just disappear. Nobody knows. These children are being brought into a demonic system to be raped, molested, and then murdered. Christians they don't even understand that for years they've been voting for child molesters. They've been voting for devil-worshipping, Luciferian, demon-possessed men and women. I'm not saying everybody in office is that. I'm saying that many of the key officials, elected and appointed, and in corporate boardrooms, and in Hollywood, in New York City, they are part of a global child molestation ring. And this must be dealt with. This is the dark cancer that's killing the country. This is it right here. It's right here now in front of us. Hillary Clinton tweeting today, her AIDS tweet. Dear Mike Flynn and Mike Flynn Jr., what goes around comets around? Referring to Comet Pizza. Why would she send something like that?
Did she? I mean, I broke with tradition here. I ran the whole clip almost up to the very end. And what the? Oh, okay. Do you mind if I cue that back up for a minute, please?
Tweet. Dear Mike Flynn and Mike Flynn, and this must be dealt with. This is the dark cancer that's killing the country. This is it right here. It's right here now in front of us. Hillary Clinton tweeting today, her AIDS tweet. Dear Mike Flynn and Mike Flynn Jr., what goes around comets around, referring to Comet Pizza.
Right.
Damn.
Why would she send something like that? Why would she want to bring that issue up again? Because she is relishing in the fact that they brought down General Flynn today because he knows what they are and what they're doing.
Right.
Or maybe, you know, they're just sort of, I mean, let's assume for a minute that actually happened. I'm not prepared to camp out on that hill, but let's assume that it happened. Could that be a little tweak of the nose? Because, see, those two, Michael Flynn and particularly his son, were full of all kinds of weird-ass Alex Jones stuff. But maybe there's another explanation. Gerald tells me, yeah, it was right there on the ballot, Hillary Clinton, child molester and Luciferian, drinker of baby blood. Oh, sure. And there's Marty using his big primate brain. But wasn't Pizzagate proven false because the pizza place didn't have an underground room? Never. Marty, have you not learned? Never let facts get in the way of a perfectly implausible conspiracy theory that will whip up the strychnine swiggers and the floor rollers and the snake handlers and the tongue speakers. They don't give a damn about facts. These are alternate facts, baby. And yes, the tweet was apparently real. Former Clinton aide Philippe Raines, not Hillary Clinton, sent out a tweet that said, Dear Mike Flynn and Mike Flynn Jr., what goes around comets around. And given your pizza obsession, see, he left this part out, Rick Wiles did. And given your pizza obsession, provides a link to jobs at Domino's. Then Hillary, oh my God, Hillary Clinton, Jesus Christ, oh, email servers, God, Goldman Sachs speeches, oh, the Republic is dying, God, Hillary, the devil! Hillary tweeted, Philippe's got his own way of saying things, but he has a point about the real consequences of fake news. They're so easily tweaked, aren't they? Steve in New York says, the hypocrisy and crocodile tears of these people is sickening, but not surprising. Bob, the hypocrisy and just disgustingly putrid nature of these people is just, well, disgusting. Well, they are that. It's prayer meeting Wednesday. Did you not know what you were getting into? And then there's noted Southern Baptist theologian and ethicist and who knows what, Dickland. No, it's not a conservative evangelical the amusement theme park, Dickland. That's the president of the Southern Evangelical Seminary. He went on the Focus Today program on the Dove TV. And this actually, more than just being something to make sport of, this is something worth a little bit of analysis. No, really.
What does concern me is that, you know, there's a new poll out that shows that 35% of Americans are pure resistance. They are not going to accept Donald Trump, whatever he does. They have made up their mind that he is not a legitimate president, and they are going to resist him at all costs. Now, there's a name for that. It's called insurrection. Mm-hmm. And it's breeding tremendous divisiveness. They are doing their very best. Some of them have said, our goal is to make the country ungovernable. Well,
it'd be awful nice, wouldn't it, if a man who practices a religion that says you're not supposed to bear false witness against your neighbors and have your mouth turned into a pit of vipers, if he'd say who that was, those some people is. But, you know, that's the Fox News style book now, so it, no, there's not going to be any attribution. But you got that? It's insurrection.
They are doing their very best. Some of them have said, our goal is to make the country ungovernable. Well, when you do that, of course, you cause tremendous civil dissent, a civil strife, but you also force the government to enforce the law, and that could get pretty tense. This looks to me more like the progressives have tried under Mr. Obama and Mrs. Clinton and others. They have tried to propagate a second American Revolution, and now with Mr. Trump's election, you have a counter revolution to the second revolution.
Thanks again to our friends at Right Wing Watch, who take one for the team every blessed day. And I don't know who does it. I don't know who's got the stomach for it. I don't know how many fifths of gin they have to go through at the end of the day just to scrub their brain out from what they've had to listen to and take clips of and whatnot. But thanks to them for that. There's only one problem with what Dickland says. He spent the entire eight years of the Obama administration, as Right Wing Watch notes, doing everything he could to raise an insurrection against Barack Obama. One particularly noteworthy moment, March 28th, 2014. He said that... let's time travel a minute, Sherman.
If this person has had a genuine experience with the Lord, and they have trusted the Lord as their Savior, I believe that this person will be in heaven. Now, having said that, is this person in an active homosexual relationship?
He is at this point, yes.
Well, I believe that the Lord also says that those who are his children, he will chastise and he will spank. And,
you know, I call me crazy, but I'm just pretty sure that there's not. I don't think the word spank appears anywhere in the Old Testament or New Testament. Maybe he's confusing it with Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And after that, you must give me a spanking. Oh, and be too naughty, zoot. I don't think the words, no, I don't think there's anywhere in the Bible that says, and God will spank.
If a Christian is in a homosexual relationship, or if a Christian is in an adulterous relationship, for instance, outside of marriage, a heterosexual relationship, God will seek to convict that person, and God will chastise that person, and God will judge that person. Let me just give you an answer that's analogous.
Shut up. We'll do the condensed version of this. He goes on to give this probably not a scintilla of truth in its story about when he was a preacher in New Orleans, how a woman converted from Christianity to Satanism and God killed her for it, and it served her right. All as a means of saying that, God will murder gay Christians, and that God was punishing America by making that black guy president. Yes. But the deeper story here is the degree to which the evangelical right has bought in lock, stock, and stinking barrel to the Trump agenda. How did that happen? Two words. Mike Pence. Mike Pence, who used to describe himself in his radio days as Rush Limbaugh on decaf. Yeah, I wouldn't want to be Rush Limbaugh on anything, nor would I describe myself as such. But that's why Pence got chosen. Specifically because it was understood that he could bring along the mouth-breathing knuckle walkers, the floor rollers, the serpent handlers, the strychnine swiggers, the Crisco hair treatment gang, and use them to try to take over the country and turn us into a theocracy. Did you realize you were involved in a second American Revolution when you were those 8 long, tormented, miserable years when Barack Obama was president of the United States? Yeah, I know. But it wouldn't be prayer meeting Wednesday if we didn't have a little, and especially to commemorate the visit by Bibi with Comrade Trump today. You know that some anti-Semitism is going to crop up somewhere along the way, right? And there he is. Larry Klayman. Oh, yes. Conservative legal activist Larry Klayman. In the wake of the Ninth Circuit smacking Trump down like a point blank whack in a game of whack-a-mole. He didn't like what the Ninth Circuit did, and he knows why they did it and who made him.
It's ironic and really troubling that the Jewish left would support other groups that came in, Muslim groups, that wanted a free flow of immigration without any borders, without any checks, other than what currently exists, which are really no checks at all. And President Trump has a real legitimate concern, as do I and as do other members of and citizens of our country who understand the great risk here to terrorism and letting these people in.
It's the Jews! The Jews! Somebody call Mel Gibson.
Particularly from Iran, which is a terrorist country among the various 7. And I take personal interest here because I am Jewish. I'm very proud of that. I also happen to be a Christian. I believe in Jesus Christ. I'm a Jewish Christian.
And you're not Jewish anymore, Lair. I mean, just saying.
And the Jewish left has been very destructive in this country as it has been in Israel. It has jeopardized the national security of both countries. In fact, in Tel Aviv today, the Jewish left is supporting wholesale immigration of immigrants from Eritrea and other places in Black Africa where these Muslims are coming in and are literally raping, pillaging, and killing people in South Tel Aviv.
Well, it has begun. The angry Indian is apparently throwing furniture somewhere out in Portlandia. The Jewish left? Really? Yes, angry. Yes, the Jew. Oh, I know. Then, on the other hand, you got your Trump-supporting neo-Nazis. And we're getting closer and closer here during the course of the program to the meatier parts of it. Over at MediaMatters.org, as Angry pointed out to me, neo-Nazis blame the Jews for Michael Flynn's resignation. Well, you know, of course. God damn it, the that last little dribble of milk in the carton in the refrigerator went bad. The Jews! You know, that's how it is if you're a neo-Nazi. The plumbing froze in the Arctic storm that Jews. It's all they got. Over to the Daily Stormer. They wrote, "Flynn is one of our best guys. This is definitely a loss. This is giving a victory to the kike media. I actually don't think the block on the travel ban was a loss. I think that was all part of the plan to get the public stirred up against activist judges to get ready for the Supreme Court to rule on an even more hardcore version of the Moslem ban." That's M-O-S-L-E-M. "But this is definitely a loss to the Jews. My personal guess is that this attack on Flynn was pushed internally by a more subversive elements in the White House that may or may not include Jared Kushner or Rince Priebus, who has seemingly attempted to railroad President Trump at times on his more hardcore measures. But this is just total speculation at the moment, and I don't want to get too hasty in making assumptions." Reality check. When the Jews is your first answer, that hasty in making assumptions thing is, well, that's a horse that's long gone out of the Reichstag. All I know is that the Jews are loving this whole spectacle and are acting like sharks in blood-tinged waters. Be careful, Mr. President. Be very careful. And, you know, this is just any old day over at Daily Stormer. Then there's Russia rises to General Flynn's defense, brush off sneaky Jewish attacks. Sneaky. We're going to be keeping a much closer eye on the White House factional struggles in the coming days and weeks, because if my senses are correct, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson will likely be the next man attacked for his ties to Russia and Vladimir Putin. The lead-up to the demise of General Flynn was somewhat ignored by us due to the sheer level of nonsense that has been pushed forth by the Lugan pressa lately, but we won't make that mistake again. The Jews are not going to get away with another bullying attack on our regime. They will be called out, and they will be defeated if and when they try again. And then, of course, there's David Duke. Yep. He went on the Twitter and said, "Trump can't let these Jews lynch General Flynn. They weren't going to stop. Jewish supremacy is out in the open like never before." Ah, yeah. I know. Makes you want to eat dirt and run rabbits, doesn't it? No, angry. No, they don't. They have no shame. None whatso flippin' ever. So it's, I don't know, do we call that a toss-up between, or was it the Jews or the, wait, maybe the Jews are part of the cabal that, oh my God, that, oh, because see, one of the origins of the pogroms of Europe was a nasty little thing called the blood libel, in which good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christians, who were Roman Catholic at the time, and, you know, Greek Orthodox, too. I mean, let's not give them a pass. They spread a rumor that Jews caused the Black Death by poisoning Christian wells. And they also spread the rumor that Jews made their matzah bread with the blood of Christian babies. This is that, you know, all over again. I mean, by that, I mean Pizzagate. Mm-hmm. Because at whom did these weirdos direct their ire in the Pizzagate? John Podesta. John Podesta is? Yes, of course. On and on and on and on. Now, let's see. I know. Going back to Dickland, Steve in New York says, are you kidding me? Again, more dripping with hypocrisy. How can these people say this after 8 years of questioning a person's very birth? Really, you're asking me how they can say that? One, they have no conscience. Two, they have no morals. Three, they have, did I mention, no conscience. Right? And also, two, because Jesus loves them. And they're going to go to heaven someday and be with him. Uh-huh. So there's that. But ever so much else. Namely this. Comrade Kumquat only took two questions from American media today at the so-called press conference. There were questions taken from the Israeli media. But those two questions didn't come from anything you would actually refer to as a news organization. It was summed up fairly succinctly by Jim Acosta. Yeah, you remember the guy who got accosted by Trump at the news conference right after the Golden Showers dossier was released. Yeah, mm-hmm. This is what he told Wolf Blitzer earlier today.
He basically said that the Michael Flynn was fired. It was totally unfair. He is a very, very good man. He didn't go into details why he actually went ahead and fired Michael Flynn. Two questions from American journalists this time from Town Hall Media and the Christian Broadcasting.
From Town Hall Media and Christian Broadcasting Network, which, using the word journalist to describe anyone from either outfit, is a pretty broad usage of the term, you got to admit.
Network, two questions from Israeli journalists. John King, if he was treated so unfairly, Michael Flynn, in this process, and he's such a good man, why did the president fire him?
It would be nice if the conservative outlets the president is calling on would ask him tough questions. And they would actually, instead of trying to curry favor with this president, they might do him a favor by letting him answer these questions. Because until he answers these questions, this story is not going to go away. He just made it more complicated by saying that. Because yesterday, the White House said the National Security Advisor was fired and the president asked for his resignation after he had eroded trust. He had lost the trust of the vice president first and then the president, as the president looked into this. The president of the United States just told the American people in the world something quite different, that unfair media attacks on his national security advisor led this man to unfairly be run out of the White House. Well, who's telling the truth? Who speaks for the president? Who should we believe? The president, his press secretary, other people around the president? Because they all give different accounts. You have a White House now that is in crisis, and calling on conservative news outlets, fine, but it doesn't answer the questions that the American people should have, not just the news media. I will also say this. You just had the president, and this is his right, quite casually, throw years of U.S. foreign policy down the drain on the I don't care if it's a one-state or a two-state solution. This is up to the parties. The United States came up with the two-state solution because it knows the parties are in intractable positions. It knows the parties are unlikely to negotiate peace, and it was part of the United States' effort to push them. Yes, you negotiate the details, but we want to give you a broad framework. It is remarkable that even before the first official meeting with the Israeli Prime Minister, the President of the United States just ripped up the Bush administration, the Obama administration, U.S. policy, and said, I don't care. You guys figure this out.
He said, whatever the Palestinians, the Israelis want, you want one state, that's fine. You want two states, that's fine. Jim Shooter, you wanted to make a...
Skip a bit, brother.
It's come. You take full.
Yeah, there we go.
Just a, it's the reddest of red herrings. She's
and where's the cover? Yeah.
And where's the cover?
That she left the election.
I want to quickly go to Jim Acosta. He's in the East Room. Jim, was that you who shouted out a question to the president at the very end, which he ignored?
Yes, Wolf, guilty as charged. That was me. I tried to ask that question there as President Trump was leaving the room. It got quiet for a few moments, and when those moments come, you take full advantage. I tried to ask the president about his associates' contacts with the Russians during the campaign. He seemed to pause for a moment as if perhaps he wanted to answer the question, but then he turned to Prime Minister Netanyahu and left the East Room. Just to pick up on what you were saying a few moments ago, what President Trump said during this news conference about Michael Flynn being treated unfairly by the quote-unquote fake news media, that is not consistent with what his own officials said yesterday in the White House briefing room. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer said that the National Security Advisor, who is now gone, misled the Vice President of the United States about his phone conversations with the Russian ambassador. And so that is not something that Michael Flynn was treated unfairly about. He did this, and he had to pay the price. Now, the president is obviously very upset about leaks coming from the intelligence community or the law enforcement community to the news media, but these are questions that are being asked, and they're being answered by officials in this government. That is something that has gone on long before Donald Trump occupied the Oval Office. I think one other thing we want to comment on very quickly, Wolf, just because you mentioned this a few moments ago. Yes, the two questions that were asked or called upon from the president in this news conference went to the Christian Broadcasting Network, which is obviously owned by Pat Robertson, the televangelist down in Virginia. It's a very conservative broadcasting network. And townhall.com, which is a very conservative news website. And so in the last three...
Might we go so far as to say that Town Hall is a fake news website? I mean, have you ever been to Town Hall? You'd know if you had, because you would have showered with bleach the minute you got done. But he was about to say something fairly...
Broadcasting network and townhall.com, which is a very conservative news website. And so in the last three news conferences, Wolf, all of the questions to the American news media have been handled by conservative press. And I think, Wolf, there's no other way to describe it, but the fix is in. This White House, this president, does not want to answer questions, critical questions, about his associates, his aides' contacts with the Russians during the course of that campaign, just as his national security advisor is being run out of this White House on a rail. And so I think that this only, you know, they may think that this is being cute, or they think this is strategic in terms of trying to shield the president from questions, but those questions can only be shielded for so long, Wolf.
The takeaway quote there is, of course, the fix is in. Uh-huh. Yeah. So all that is prologue. I sat and watched that thing, that press conference, that joint press conference with two of the biggest psychopaths out freely wandering the face of planet Earth, Bibi and Comrade Kumquat. And the question that that Trump took from a member of the Israeli media, you know, I mean, I made some joke on Facebook a few days ago about playing records backwards. Sometimes I feel like I'm not even listening to English, and I'm not in any wise talking about the accent of the Israeli journalist. I'm talking about Trump. The reporter asked, and this is a transcript, Mr. President, since your election campaign and even after your victory, I mean, okay, let me be clear. This is a real question. I mean, this is a question that we've dealt with on this program for a while now. Mr. President, since your election campaign and even after your victory, we've seen a sharp rise in anti-Semitic incidents across the United States. And that's the truth. I mean, when you go to a synagogue and you spray paint a swastika or Pepe the Frog or whatever, it does not take a Blue Ribbon Commission panel to sort out whether or not that's anti-Semitic. And I wonder, he continued, what you say to those among the Jewish community in the States and in Israel and maybe around the world, maybe, who believe and feel that your administration is playing with xenophobia and maybe racist tones. And Mr. Prime Minister, do you agree, this was to Netanyahu, to what the president just said about the need for Israel to restrain or to stop settlement activity in the West Bank? And a quick follow-up on my friend's questions. Simple question, do you back off from your vision to end the end of the conflict of two-state solution as you lay out in something speech, or you still support it? Thanks. That's the whole question. I even read the part of the question that wasn't directed at Trump. The question that was directed at Trump was, what about all the anti-Semitism that has boiled up in the United States in the wake of your election? What about it? He was asked directly. And there's no getting around it. It's really happening. And yet, because this guy was not a member of the American press, he couldn't just start hollering, fake news, fake news, fake news. He instead answered as follows. I guess we've entered a new phase of American politics, because I have to issue hockey puck warnings with statements made by the President of the United States. So, hockey puck warning. Get the hockey puck. Don't be casual about it. Get a good bite down on it. Couple of loops of duct tape, because otherwise you'll just spit it right across the room and you might break a window or something. Or worse, a mirror. Well, I just want to say that we are, you know, and I don't want to put too fine a point on it, but the question is about the sharp rise in anti-Semitic incidents across the United States. We're clear on that, right? Well, I just want to say that we are, you know, very honored by the victory that we had. 306 Electoral College votes. We were not supposed to crack 220. And he leans over and looks at Bibi and says, you know that, right? There was no way to 221. But then they said there's no way to 270. And there's tremendous enthusiasm out there. This is the answer to what do you do about rising anti-Semitism in the United States. And he says there's tremendous enthusiasm out there. Are we to understand that he defines this rise in anti-Semitism in the United States or attributes it to an excess of enthusiasm? I will say that we're going to have peace in this country. We're going to stop crime in this country. We're going to do everything within our power to stop long simmering racism and every other thing that's going on, because a lot of bad things have been taking place over a long period of time. I think one of the reasons I won the election is because we have a very, very divided nation. Very divided, and hopefully I'll be able to do something about that. And I, you know, something that was very important to me. I hate it when reality intrudes into my mind so badly, or when reality itself is so abstruse. Is that the word? At least I'm trying. That I read something and immediately feel like I've just, you know, taken a big swig of really bad liquor. Hopefully I'll be able to do something about that. And I, you know, something that was very important to me. As far as people, Jewish people, so many friends, a daughter who happens to be here right now, a son-in-law, and three beautiful grandchildren. I think that you're going to see a lot of different United States of America over the next 3, 4, or 8 years. Finally, he says something that is undeniably true. But I don't think he means what you and I mean. I think a lot of good things are happening, and you're going to see a lot of love. You're going to see a lot of love. Okay? Thank you. Holy. I mean, so that second paragraph is, some of my best friends are Jewish. You know, I mean, like, my daughter married a Jew guy, and she became a Jew woman, and my Jew grandchildren are Jew grandchildren. So, I don't really... I don't know who the guy wrote for. Jerusalem Post, Haaretz. Israeli Sports Illustrated. But criminy. I know this is troubling to... But what's it... Oh, I've been rendered speechless again. So his answer to the question, what are you going to do about anti-Semitism, rising anti-Semitism, disturbing rises in increases in anti-Semitism in the United States? His answer to that is, my grandkids are Jewish. Have I got that? If you've got a better, more meaningful analysis, I'm so open to it. I mean, help, because I'm just at sea with this. I'm adrift. I know, Arthur. A simple sentence. Wait, what? Well, yeah, in another world, angry. That's true. It's the some of my best friends are black defense. Although, can you imagine? Can you imagine when she was younger, Ivanka bringing a black dude home? Sorry, but I mean, wealthy and Jewish, Donnie can. He can get used to that. I mean, I've got three beautiful Jewish grandchildren. Of course, they're never going to go to heaven. Yeah, I know. Angry, wasn't it? Angry says, mighty white of Trump to say that, wasn't it? No. It was mighty orange of him. Come on, let's keep it. Don't confuse me, angry. And it's going to be 4 years of this. And I'm already, I mean, I can't. There's just no. I got to get well soon. Just so I can figure out maybe electroshock therapy or some talk therapy or something. But I got through 8 years of Bush, 8 years of Obama, you know, which included the cabinet position we created called the the Secretary of Jesus Barack, you know, because every now and then you just kind of wanted to, right? But I actually screenshotted that because I want to hang on to it. Reporter dude asks him about the sharp increase in anti-Semitism in the United States, and his first response is to talk about his electoral victory. I mean, it really is all about him, isn't it? He really can't tear himself away from himself. In the far frozen north, Ron says, I think the word you're looking for, Bob, is surreal. Yeah, but Ron, it's so damn surreal that I think Salvador Dali might well look at a situation like this and go, fuck it, I'm done, I'm never painting again, it's over. I can paint all the melting clock faces I wanted from now till hell freezes over. I can't touch this. And Ron notes, that reporter must have looked at his notes and thought, what the fuck am I supposed to do with that answer? This reporter got to ask a question in Washington today, dear readers. This reporter is presently sitting in a bar on Pennsylvania Avenue trying to drink himself into something that resembles insanity to turn this into a column. I'm quitting. I mean, this is that scene out of every cheesy old 50s and 60s sitcom where the guy at the bar sees Samantha appear and disappear at the bar and just takes the pint bottle out of his pocket and throws it over his shoulder. You can't compete. Very good, Arthur, very good. But enough about me. What do you think about me? It really is about the size of it, isn't it? The Mac simply writes, the buffoonery is only overshadowed by the assholery. But remember, there's going to be... And this is the biggest non sequitur of the whole thing. I mean, there's the naked egoism of talking about the election first. But then to close it with, I think you're going to see a lot of different United States of America over the next 3, 4, or 8 years. By the way, you know that even as he was being inaugurated, he was filing papers to run for re-election, right? You caught that. Yeah, it's true. I don't even know what I think that you're going to see a lot of different United States of America over the next 3, 4, 8 years means. And I am a long-time practitioner of the art of word-knowing. And I'm ready to throw away my papyrus and my reeds and brushes and my chalks and all of that and to just have done with it. Just go strictly, maybe just move over to strictly nonverbal. Clicks and grunts. But then again, that's pretty much what we got. I think a lot of good things are happening. Like the swastikas on the synagogues? I mean, is that where we're going? And you're going to see a lot of love. You're going to see a lot of love. Okay? Thank you. Carol Baker merely says, Norm! Norm! great googly moogly. So it's 4 minutes past the hour. I want to thank Keith for jumping in on the fundraising. We are $10 along the way toward Brother Deacon Ace's $40 challenge. And I neglected to mention that Mike in Cascadia also has a challenge on the table of $50. So we could easily, we could knock down 200 of the $450 that we need to raise this evening just by meeting those two challenges. And we're $10 along the way toward $100 in challenges this evening. So hopefully, that'll happen. I know $450 is a lot of money. That's $10 a piece from 45 different people, and we don't have nights like that. But still, just responding to these two challenges would take it down to $250, and we'll make it $450 tomorrow night if we could. So we'll cross our fingers. I'm going to take a break because I can't handle that. I mean, that's too knucking thoughts. But there's going to be a lot of love. This is listener-supported conversation radio. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid. I confess, that one's been in the works for a while, ever since I saw the quote, because I just, you know, we're learning that whatever the last thing Trump hears is one of the first things out of his mouth. And I just had this vision of his quivering adipose self in the shower or something. You don't want to go there. And Pandora playing in the background, and Nicolette Larson comes on with a lot of love, and it just garbage in, garbage out. Not that the song's garbage, and my God, what a sad, sad end to that woman, far too young. What a lovely voice Nicolette Larson had. So he's standing there waiting to go on, and because that's one of those. Any song can be an earworm. And it's going to take a lot of love. He's scrubbing his shiny little scalp. It's going to take a lot of love. We're not going to take the image any further. DJ disease. It's going to be a lot of love. A lot of love. Because you also know that that's about as much of the song as he could remember. I'm probably going to listen to that again after the program. It's a sweet song. That 70s flute solo. I mean, yeah. Matt in San Francisco says, I've been hearing pundits talk. Perhaps Trump is playing chess while everyone thinks he's playing checkers. I guess the thought being he is brilliantly diverting attention from what is really going on. Personally, I don't think so. I think he's just one crazy old man. The people around him might be trying to put lipstick on this pig of an administration, but dear hair leader, he cray-cray. He be. Kitty in Boston yells out his own name during sex. Too bad Dolt 45's ramble didn't include a comment like, my daughter converted to Judaism and I'd still fuck her. Because, here. Yeah. Yeah, you definitely get a little jingle for that, Kitty. And some stuff fell on the floor, too, so. What a bargain! Really, we're going to do this now? Yeah, now that's not the cowbell. That's just the goat wandering past. Knocked over my damn soy sauce. Yes, I have soy sauce in the studio. Don't ask. You never know when you're going to suddenly need to drench a piece of grocery store sushi or something. Yells his own name during sex. Yeah, so what happens if I yell my own name? All I got back was, oh God. Okay, let's run over and check in with John in Central PA. Hey, John.
Hey, Bob, long time to talk.
Yeah, it's been too long. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's all right. You had to do what you had to do, man. You did. You had a very important retreat that one week to go to Washington, and then of course you were sick last week. So I hope you're feeling better.
I'm trying to get better. I'm not there yet. I still haven't really had much in the way of food.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully by the weekend.
It's a good mandatory weight loss program. Maybe I'll take off 10, 15 pounds. I could stand to.
Doing it the hard way, huh? The really hard way.
Yeah, it's the only way I know.
So did Trump say today that he no longer supports a two-state solution in Israel?
Yeah.
In regards to this? Didn't he say a couple weeks ago when all of the sparkled... What do you call them again? The fake progressives.
Oh, the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry.
Yeah, when they were praising him for saying that he supports a one state solution or a two state solution, and they were all praising him. And at the time, I thought to myself, He is a liar. You know, don't listen to anything he says. He lies. You cannot trust him. I tried to tell that to a bunch of, you know, these guys, and, you know, they wouldn't listen, but here we are again, and guess what they're doing? They're complaining about it. Oh, he's went back on his word on the two-state solution. You can't listen to what he says. It's like, yeah, well, we were telling you that for how many months now, so.
Well, it actually gets even weirder, because when asked about the two-state solution, among the other things that he said was this isn't much better than the previous quote, okay? It's not a lot of help, John. So I'm looking at two-state and one-state, and I like the one that both parties like. I'm very happy with the one that both parties like. I can live with either one. I thought for a while the two-state looked like it may be the easier of the two, but honestly, if Bibi and if Israel and the Palestinians are happy, I'm happy with the one they like the best.
Which is the Palestinians.
I mean, if you need to take a moment and run out in the yard and scream, it'll be okay, because we'll all understand.
Right. Well, that doesn't make any sense at all, because the Palestinians, anything other than a two-state solution, scares the Palestinians to death. You know, I mean, they were like rejoicing in the streets when he publicly said he supports a one-state solution. You know, they were saying stuff like, we love Mr. Trump or President Trump, or, you know, even though I don't like to say those two words, I'm quoting them, but I don't usually say president and that word beside it, you know, unless I'm quoting somebody. But, you know, now they're all distraught, and the Palestinians today are, kind of a little bit horrified by his comments about that, and now they know that nobody can trust him. And, you know, the way I understand it, the Palestinians want a two-state solution, and the Israelis probably, well, at least this guy, Netanyahu, he supports a one-state solution.
Look, let's quit fooling around. He supports the genocide of the Palestinian people. Because that's what's been going on since 1948.
Really?
But
that's not like a hyperbole. I'm not trying to say that you're trying that you're exaggerating.
Well, it's what's
like,
happening.
Okay, because I know that they bombed the Gaza Strip so many times.
You'd have to look for them, but there's a really good series of maps that you can find on the internet that starts out like 1947. And then the partition, and like Palestine is in green. And the green part gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. Well,
so
that's a lot
like...
of that's because a lot of Palestinians are getting removed.
Oh, really? So they're conquering?
Yes.
More or less? I know that's an ancient kind of a
no, there's nothing ancient about it. It's what's going on. Palestine is being conquered.
Okay, and nobody does a damn thing about it, I guess.
Oh, no,
right?
No. I mean, absolutely. I mean, Israel is the ultimate special snowflake.
Oh, wow.
That's a loaded term, I realize. I won't accept being there's a difference between Zionism and Judaism. Because
yeah.
There's and don't take it from me. Ask somebody, you know, who's one or the other. Now the Zionists would like you to believe that the two are inseparable, but they're not.
Okay,
they're not. Zionism is a sort of supremacy theory.
Okay.
Whereby everything must be subsumed to the sort of manifest destiny of the nation state of Israel, which is entirely separate from, you know, Jewishness.
Yeah, Judaism is basically just a person who practices the Jewish faith, right? And they don't really have much to do with Israel. Yeah, because
I don't think you're going to find a whole lot of Ashkenazic genetics in, say, Ivanka, formerly Trump. But
right.
You know, she wanted to marry Jared, and the precondition on that was, okay, you got to be of my faith. So, and I doubt if she was raised. She might have been raised nominally Christian at best, but goodbye. And she took up his faith. And Jared Kushner is even like Orthodox. Yeah, you know, he's not one of these reform, and I'm not saying anything bad about Reform Judaism. I probably have more respect for Reform Judaism than any of the other forms. But no.
So he's the type that probably knows Hebrew
doubtless he can read Hebrew and right.
Well, the Jewish faith. I know a lot of them. I've heard of a lot of Jewish people that voted for Trump because of Israel, and I'm not sure why. I guess those are the types of Jews that support. They had a preconceived notion that he was going to allow the Israelis to expand. Is that what that was? I never really, asked about it, but I do know of a couple of people. I think it was Judy Gold. She's a comedian. She has her own podcast.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, she was talking about she had a therapist who's Jewish, a woman in New York City, who is a one solution person. Like the person is progressive in every other way, but she supported Trump because of Israel. But she never really elaborated on what the parameters of that was.
Well, I can I understand. I understand the devotion to Israel. I really, really do.
Absolutely.
There's something that says, look, the Jewish people need a state of their own because of the history of how they have been mistreated by Christianity and Christian states over, the last 2,000 years. And then there's their own history. I mean, the Old Testament, once you get past the Ark and the Tower of Babel, and it becomes a history of Israel and Judah just getting their asses kicked from here to kingdom come. I mean, just got beat. I mean, once you get past Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, and the walls come tumbling down, it's just a long string of Israel getting its ass kicked. I mean, there you are minding your own business, and here comes Nebuchadnezzar and drags your ass off to captivity in Babylon. Boom. Okay, so you finally get to go home, and you start working on a new temple, and here come the Syrians, and then the Assyrians drag your ass off, and okay, we get back from that, and son of a bitch, here come the Persians, and your ass is gone again. That's the kind of thing that can instill just a little bit of archetypal, sort of deep-seated paranoia in a people. And we pay special attention to that in the case of Judaism because of the position that they occupy relative to the Old Testament, which, of course, was bogarted by the Christian movement into being the Old Testament of the Bible. It ain't Christianity's at all in the first place.
Right.
We don't seem to get nearly as upset about other put-upon peoples, Native Americans or indigenous peoples of the Americas generally. There's in the fictional classic Catch-22 by Joseph Heller. I don't know if you're familiar. If you haven't, you should.
Part of it, yeah.
Yeah, you'll thank me. There's a character in there who is Native American whose name is Big Chief White Half-Oat. And the story of his life is that every time the white people make his family move somewhere else, they have a way of settling them on top of oil. and then they kick them off that land and make them go somewhere else. And after a while, they figure it out, and the oil companies just start following the white half-oat family, and then they just kick them off again and start drilling for oil. I mean, that's it. It's hilarious the way it's described, but the reality of it, to the extent that there can be reality in fiction, is tragic.
Yeah.
Well, we don't, you know, the genocide of Native Americans was huge. But again, we don't get so worked up about that. That is not in any ways to discount what has been done to the Jewish people over the course of 3,000 years. But
right. Well,
it culminates in this Zionist institutional paranoia that we see in Israel today. And I take, you know, I believe what Barack Obama said is absolutely true, and what John Kerry said as absolutely true. There is no way to be a completely Jewish state and democratic, how did they put it, and continue to do to the Palestinians what they're doing to the Palestinians. I'm paraphrasing. It's just physically impossible.
That's being hailed as one of the most progressive things that that administration has done by some of the what I call the libertarian left, which is the people that we refer to as the Sparkle Fart, you know, brigade, basically fake progressives. Well, I don't know if they're fake progressives, but you know, they were kind of praising Obama administration and Kerry for saying that, because they thought, well, finally they're being called out. And yeah, that was David, I don't know if you know who David Pakman is. He comes on.
Yeah, I know. I know who he is.
Well, he's constantly being accused of being a Zionist because he is Jewish and he sometimes visits Israel, but he criticizes Israel. Maybe I don't know. Maybe I just don't understand what Zionism really is. I mean, it's because he criticizes Israel. Is that what they mean by Zionist, a person who criticizes Israel?
No. Zionism means somebody who thinks that, that you've asked far too complicated a question for far too short a period of time. Zionists believe in the absolute necessity of a Jewish state, and that Jewish state must be dominant. In its original form at the formation of Israel, you know, it said, you know, look, we're going to have to tolerate a lot of things. So Israel was born in blood, and it was born in blood, in the blood of terrorist attacks, not a whit different from what Muslim terrorists do, okay?
Right,
or Arabic terrorists, the bombing of the King David Hotel, suicide bombings, the bombing of the King David Hotel, the Irgun. They were terrorist murderers, and they murdered their way into getting a state. But in its inception, Israel was going to be a semi-secular democratic institution modeled on European liberal, small L liberal ideals. And for a long time, it was. I mean, there was a lot of fighting, but it was. But in the last 30, 40 years, it has taken a turn toward right-wing theocracy. And so now you wind up with Bibi Netanyahu, who thinks that anybody who ever delivered Jerry Seinfeld a cold cup of coffee is an anti-Semite.
Yeah, right. Well, Zionism, when somebody accuses, so it's basically like the people that tout that term Zionist are the neo-Nazi types.
Oh, well, the phrase is so loaded, you can't really say anything definitive about it. I mean, there are Israelis who will proudly say, yes, I'm a Zionist. okay? And then there are people who have so worn the word out that it's a it's another one of those words for anything that they don't like. And those are, you know, and those people are at polar opposites from one another.
Right.
So in say Arabic propaganda, you will see the term Zion, the murderous running dogs of Zionism. Okay. And I'm just paraphrasing from the way we used to be referred to by the communist Chinese, you know, the running dogs of capitalism, whatever. Neo-Nazis will use it as a pejorative term. The father of Zionism is a man named Theodor Herzl. He wrote a book toward the end of the 19th century, Der Judenstaat, the Jewish state. He proposed and foresaw the founding of a purely Jewish state sometime in the 20th century. And you get a buy-in from the British with the Balfour Declaration, 1920? And it leads in the ashes of World War II to the establishment of Israel smack dab on top of people who had been living there for 1,000 years, 1,500, 2,000 years, namely the Palestinians, who didn't much care for the fact that they were having their land stolen from them to create a state for the Jewish people in the wake of World War II.
Does that
make any sense at all?
Yeah. It's a long history. It's like you said, it's very complex. And you know, they've had we could probably spend hours on talking about even things like the history of Israel itself. You know,
days. If you want to get all down and dirty archaeologist about it, you can go back, and it's weird. Everything seems to go back to around 1400 BCE. That whole area goes through this monumental upheaval at about that time. These mass migrations of people. And, you know, people, for instance, people don't know that, like, the first five books of the Bible, the Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, whatever. The origin myth that's contained in Genesis was written by the scholarly Jewish priesthood during the Persian captivity?
You know a lot about world history.
Rabbinical scholars have got to just sit back and chuckle at Southern Baptists and stuff. And they're, no, God really wrote this.
You know all about that. I'm sure you grew up in a Southern Baptist church.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it probably explains some of the self-medication I've engaged in over the course of the years.
Yeah.
But there's so much migration through there, but what's weird is we've got record keeping. The Egyptians were keeping pretty solid records. And so we find them referencing the Hapiru. And that is just tantalizingly tempting to just sort of transliterate that into Hebrew.
Okay.
But what's weird is that the Egyptians who kept such great records have no record whatsoever of ever enslaving any of those people and making them build so much as a mud hut. And there is no archaeological evidence whatsoever of the Exodus, the central origin myth. There's no archaeological evidence to support it at all. You'd think that a few thousand people wandering around in the desert for 40 years somebody would lose a shoe.
Yeah, or something.
Or, you know, and you know, or, you know, somebody would drop a brooch. Or, you
so
know,
it's a lie.
Belt buckle, for God's sakes. Nothing. Right. Not a sausage.
So it's basically a lie.
I'm not going to say it's a lie. It's a myth. I mean, it's an origin myth. Everybody's got, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that Gilgamesh is a lie. The Epic of Gilgamesh is an origin myth. Everybody's got him. I mean, you know, the indigenous people of this continent talk about Turtle Island. Well, obviously, there's no island made out of turtles.
Right.
But it's the origin myth. And you know, the same goes for any culture. God made man out of dirt. All right, cool. There are other cultures who say that, you know, human beings emerged after the last time the world got destroyed because they lived in a cave with a jaguar. What the fuck? I mean, come on, it's just mythology.
Yeah. That's just like the cult but, that we are dealing with today.
Yeah, try to tell a Baptist that Adam and Eve are a myth, and they will get fighting mad. Even though the people who own that book and own the rights to it and fought and bled and died for it, they recognize it's a myth. 7-day creation, all of that stuff. Oh, no, but Ken Ham gets goddamn tax breaks in Kentucky for building a fucking Ark theme park. Ooh! Sorry. Sorry, I'm all over the place. I apologize.
Oh, that's all right. Isn't he from, like, another country?
He's not from another country. He's from Australia. And I like to periodically remind our friends down there that he is theirs, and we would like for them to come and take him the fuck home.
So that's kind of conservative Australia, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think you can generalize that way.
Okay, kind of like here where we got some crazies, and then we got people who are free thinkers like you and I, and, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag. But I wanted to ask you about a movie that I saw the other day, and I'm wondering if you saw it or not. It's called, and now it's not the old Klansman movie that's called this, but it's called Birth of a Nation.
Not D.W. Griffith?
Yeah, not the one that was, you know, made by the Klansman or whatever it was. But, it's the best movie I've ever seen since, like, Gettysburg, a historical movie anyway. It's based on a true story, and I'm sure you've heard about, or you know all about this situation, that there was a slave rebellion in Southampton County, Virginia, in 1831. And it's the book is based on, or the movie is based on that, and I guess there's a book about it, too. And it was such a great movie. When watching the movie, I realized that the Southern slave owners were the fascists of their time, because they were so authoritarian and right-wing, you know, that they had patrols constantly. At night, they had people on horseback riding around looking for runaway slaves so they could shoot them, you know.
Yeah,
and take them and get money for it and shit like that. They thought that they were superior, you know, which we all know that. And just watching it just made me realize, you know, because of dealing with the fascism that we're dealing with now, that these people were the fascists of their time. You know, they were good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical.
Hey, you've got it down. You got it.
They were really religious, right? They were pretty much.
Oh yeah, yeah. One of my ancestors, the brother of one of my distant grandmothers, was a preacher named Sam Black, and he rode circuit as a minister, and he preached those. He loved to preach those portions of the Bible that says, slaves, be obedient to your masters. And he preached that slavery was endorsed by God Almighty himself, because the Bible is just chock full of slaves.
Right, and they actually talk about that in this movie, because it's about a slave who was taught to read by his master, because they kind of sensed that he was a very smart guy, so they taught him how to read, and which for some reason at that part of the county, I always thought that it was like a, they always thought it was a sin to, for a slave to read, and that people would get kind of shunned for allowing their slaves to read and to teach them to read and write. But they kind of showed him off to the townspeople, like, look at me, I got a slave that can read the Bible, and he became a preacher, and he was devout, very devout, and he talked about that. He said, you know, in the Bible, it says there's lines that justify our enslavement, but yet there's also, but for every one that you see, every line that you see that justifies our enslavement, there's another one damning these people to hell for what they're doing to us, you know, because they, you know, of course they tortured, they killed them, but after this slave uprising or rebellion, I guess even though they hung all the guys that were involved in it, they were pissed off and inflamed, so they went around and all these white people started killing a bunch of slaves, and they were killing free black people and everything else like that, because they were so pissed off, they threw an absolute fit over it.
Well, the problem with a scenario like that is that it happened time and time and time and time again. It happened before the Civil War. It happened, no, not the rebellion, the white people getting all inflamed and going and killing the hell out of black communities. It happened before the Civil War, and it happened after the Civil War. It happened in Oklahoma. It happened in North Carolina. It happened in Virginia. It happened in Florida. I mean, it's part of the shameful, buried history, undertold history, underreported history of this country. I got a little background from Marty. Birth of a Nation, written, directed, and starring Nate Parker, released just last year. I probably need to go and see that. I need to look that up.
Oh yeah, you guys have Redbox in West Virginia?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's where I got it from. So it's out.
I've got several different movie viewing options. So I'll go and look for it. At the very least, I can rent it on Amazon.
Oh, it's great. But I saw on Twitter news before I saw it, but some alt-right person, a Trump supporter, was talking about that movie and was saying, oh, the Democratic Party, slave-owning Democrats did this to them. So, you know...
anytime you see anybody dealing with that, you need to know first and foremost that you are dealing with a idiot, okay?
Because
Republicans advance that notion because they know that they're doing it with people who will not be able to see through their bullshit. Okay? The Republican Party, the Republican Party had a decidedly liberal bent in 1860. Because a whole lot of people flocked to the Republican Party from the abolitionist movement. But even that was not monolithic. The abolitionist movement had a lot of different branches.
They had Democrats too.
Well, to a certain extent, but the thing is, anybody who says, "Well, you know, the Democrats founded the Klan," okay, yeah, sure, historically, absolutely. But there's this little thing called the Civil Rights Act in the 1960s, and signing the Voting Rights and Civil Rights Act into law, Lyndon Johnson said, "We have lost the South for a generation." Turns out it's probably going to be 2, 3, 4 generations. Because happened is all the Southern Democrats suddenly decided they were Republicans after all, because the Democratic Party was welcome and opening to people of color who wanted to do things like vote and have full access to civil rights and citizenship. And so they can say Lincoln freed the slaves all they want to, but that ain't, you know, that was great grandpappy's Republican Party. That was not the Republican Party of today.
they're not the same political parties. They have the same name.
No, because there's because there's a constant evolution.
Yeah, and the fact that the two-party system is so deeply systemic, that it's so deep in our into our system that no matter what ideology it is, it's subject to change, but you have to keep the same name or else you're never going to get elected into office if you don't go through any of these two parties. And that's, like you said, they evolved over the years. You cannot compare 1860s political party to a 2017 political party. You just can't do it because it doesn't – you can't square that circle. And I find it ironic that the same alt-right people who have said so many – have demonized Barack Obama, saying that he wasn't born here because, you know, if he was white, they would have never, ever touted that conspiracy theory, ever. We know that. But saying that he wasn't born here – calling him monkey, him and his wife and his family monkeys and stuff like that, and then they turn around and say that the Democrats were slaveholders, you know. And not only that, but I also bring up to them, who was slaveholders back then? I tell them it was rich people, very wealthy people were slaveholders who are most always right wingers. I said the Democratic Party base is not wealthy people, you know. Maybe some, you know, there might be a couple celebrities who are Democrats and things, but it's not the same. I mean, it's because of our two-party system, they have to use the name, one of the two names, depending on what, you know, which depends on opportunistic reasons, you know. Somebody might become a Democrat because, well, the Republicans, well, right now are so extreme. So somebody who might be a liberal moderate says, okay, I'll become a Democrat. But both on the political spectrum, on the quadrant, the Democrats are actually in the right wing. They're close to the center, but they're in the right wing of thwart carrying quadrant of the political spectrum. The Republicans are off. I mean, they're getting so far right and in the top of thwart carrying far right quadrant. It's getting ridiculous. And in the path they're going on now, they're going to end up being the absolute totalitarians. And then, you know, and just to add this to it, Malloy said the other night, and I disagree with him on this point, but he said the Democratic Party is dead. It's destroyed. But, I mean, I understand where he's coming from with that, but if you look at the back in 2008, the Republicans suffered a huger loss than what the Democrats did this year. The Democrats had, upwards of 60 Democratic senators in the Senate? Didn't they have, a supermajority?
The Democrats took ostensibly a supermajority in 2008, but it never really was one because the last piece of that puzzle was Al Franken, and it took something like 6 months to even get him in office because of the recounts and the challenges.
Right.
And it also included people like Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas and Ben Nelson of Nebraska, who are no more Democrats than I'm, than I'm Hammurabi of Eridu.
Well, that, you know what, that brings me to, that's a great segue into something that I've been thinking about lately, and I think that if there's any constitutional amendment that we need in this country, seriously, it's to abolish and ban political parties in this country, because I realized this last week when that court ruling came down against Trump's bullshit fascist ban. I thought to myself, well, here's the judiciary branch that is pretty much the only branch of government that works well. I wonder why. And then I kind of realized they're not really plagued by partisan politics the way that the other two branches are. I mean, you might have people that run under a party, but they don't govern or they don't execute their office as a partisan. Sometimes you'll have appointees from a Republican or a Democrat, but that will rule in favor of a law that might be passed by Republicans or Democrats. They go by the rule of law. They worship the Constitution more than the other two branches do, and the other two branches have been plagued by politics. So I think that if we got rid of the political parties, and just go off the caucus system, which we already have caucuses in there. Like, the, you know, the Freedom Caucus is the Tea Party. You got the Progressive Caucus, which is the one that Keith Ellison chairs. So that instead of arguing whether or not somebody like Joe Manchin is a real Democrat, we can say, well, Joe Manchin caucused with the conservatives again last time they voted, and then the next time he might caucus with some of the progressives when it comes to maybe the health care or something like that. You know, that's where I think the political parties are absolutely tearing this country into pieces. That's what.
Well,
that's
kind of what Sandra and I were talking about briefly last night. As you pursue your further education in the whys and wherefores of this country, you do yourself a real favor if you read the Federalist Papers, because that's how we wind. That's the precursor arguments for the Constitution, and if you go to Federalist 10, you will read James Madison absolutely beside himself over the idea of what was referred to in the lingo of the day as faction,
which is exactly what it is.
And political parties are faction, and you know, Madison was pretty well convinced that faction, and Washington too. Sandra mentioned George Washington. George Washington said, no, you go into factionalism, you're toast. And no sooner had Washington stepped down than faction developed, because immediately there was a presidential race. John Adams won as a Federalist. And boom,
right.
It was Federalists versus Republicans. And the Republicans were, of course, what we would later recognize as the Democratic Party. Interesting that the word gets bounced around that way. But and then Jefferson comes in as a Republican. And the Republicans and the Federalists are at each other's throats until the Federalists sort of fade away and transform into the Whigs. And the Whigs fade away and get sucked up into the new Republican Party. And by then the Republicans had become Jacksonian Democrats.
Right.
But after worrying and recognizing the danger of faction, bam, the first thing they did was fall right into it.
And that's in my opinion, that's the downfall of the country as we know it right now. And
well, the problem, though, is that Madison recognized that as bad as it is, it's almost impossible to evade. Because he said people will naturally form, you know, affinity groups.
Yeah.
And he tried to rationalize his way through it, saying things like, well, you know, okay, it's different. It's one thing if, like, all the bakers band together and all the blacksmiths band together. And you and I would recognize
as
lobby groups.
Right.
But if you have banded together as a faction, on more ephemeral grounds, like Federalists versus Republicans, well, that's trouble. That's just the beginning. That's just the beginning of trouble. And because of the way the Constitution sets up a first past the post electoral victory system, and because the Congress is set up in such a way as to not, you know, the House doesn't exist, you know, it's not a parliamentary government. Let's put it that way. It is a bicameral legislature. It was a really new approach to government. This bicameral legislature, but with three divided, separate but equal. There's a dangerous term. Branches of government that would check and balance each other. It was a noble experiment.
Well, the other two are not doing a good job of checking and balancing each other, the legislative and the executive, because of political parties, you have craven politicians who don't want to investigate the obvious, you know, controversies and illegal activities of the current president. You know, because of party politics. And if they weren't a part of a political party, they might have a constituency to worry about, But, you know, they, at least they can say, well, I have no axe to grind here. I have no, you know, or I have no skin in the game with this. Let's do an investigation. But instead they say no. And, well, I heard you talk a couple of times, I think you did yesterday with Sandra, about a constitutional convention. And I'm wondering what you mean by that.
Okay. Article 5 of the Constitution has this little time bomb tucked into it. And there were a lot of compromises made to get the Constitution, the three-fifths compromise, you know, where slaves were counted as three-fifths of a human being, so that the relatively sparsely populated by white folks southern states wouldn't get completely steamrolled by the more populous northern states, is an example of that.
But in Article 5,
there was a little compromise after they worked out the details of how to amend the Constitution. There's this little thing tucked away that said if you can get, and it works out to 34 states now, I think it's two-thirds. If you can get two-thirds of the states to sign on to a call for a constitutional convention, you get to have one.
Well, to make a new constitution?
Yeah.
So would that be a bad thing, though?
Yes, that would be a terrible thing.
Because of the way Republicans...
No, because of the history of the foundation of the first Constitution. The United States at one point operated under the Articles of Confederacy. You know that, right?
Yes.
The earliest form of the United States government was the Articles of Confederacy. And they were signed on to by all 13 states, with the agreement that all 13 states had to agree if the articles were to be amended. And in those early years of the United States, troubling things were happening. For instance, democracy was breaking out all over. You had all kinds of democratic experiments taking place. And you also had the potential for the states to be at each other's throats at any given moment, because the dynamic tensions were always there. So James Madison, and Dr. Bill is much better at this than I, and I'm just trying to do the condensed version. James Madison got this notion in his head that he would call a convention to amend and modify, tweak, if you will, the Articles of Confederation. And it took a couple of tries because there were some very skittish states who said, no, we're not doing this. But then they finally got a convention assembled. They gaveled it in, and James Madison hijacked it. And suddenly it turned into a constitutional convention, and the Articles of Confederation were never heard from again. And in 1787, they ratify the Constitution, and that's more or less what we've operated under since.
Yeah.
And so the first rule of constitutional conventions is kind of don't talk about constitutional conventions.
So if they had another one, these Republicans could say, the hell with freedom of religion. Christianity is the
that's a starting place, but what they say, no, but the subterfuge, because there's a real movement out there for it, and there's even some loopy progressives who go, yeah, that would be a great idea. never realizing what would be done to them the minute that the goddamn thing was gaveled in. You get 34 states to call for a constitutional convention, and the Republicans, and they're led by that creepy little guy with a voice made for print named Mark Levin. I don't know if you're familiar with him or not.
No, I've heard of him, yeah.
It's like, I don't know, it's like listening to broken glass scrape on concrete. he said, no, we're just going to have a limited constitutional convention, we're going to gavel it open, we're going to pass a balanced budget amendment, and we're going to gavel it closed. And anybody who knows American history goes, sure you are. because the gavel will be in the air, and some good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, evangelical fundamentalist will say, Mr. Speaker! And the gavel doesn't come down. And the next thing you know, you're establishing a Christian religion. You are codifying the ability of men to determine what women do with their bodies. And maybe you're maybe you want to make sure that everybody in America has to own a gun. I mean, any number of evil, wicked, silly bullshit can happen. And there's and even if the people who gavel it in, who are calling for the convention, have good intentions, it's still going to get hijacked. And those poor little progressives who thought, yeah, you know what we're going to do? We're going to pass an amendment to get rid of Citizens United. Damn skippy we are. Are we sure? And some right-winger will walk up and just whack. Hey, boy, come with me outside. Yeah, let me show you what's back behind the barn. And they'll just gut stomp the little progressives. Yeah, you still want your little amendment, do you? No, not anymore, thanks.
Yeah, really, though. And that's why we got to start getting tough with these people. We need to start playing the same dirty damn tricks that they play. I don't care if it's, you know, if what they do is wicked. And I'm sick and tired of some of the progressives that say, oh, we got to be nice. You know, when last week, I know it's kind of getting a little off topic, but it's there's a point I'm going to arrive at about getting as tough as, you know, trying to play their games. Well, not play their games, but trying to combat their wickedness.
Beat them at their own?
Yeah, pretty much. And stand up to them and say no. You know, last week when Trump had a few Democrats in a meeting, he said to them that, Pocahontas is now the face of your party, unquote. Why the fuck did none of those Democrats get up and say, Mr. President, fuck you?
Or how about, Donnie, that's inappropriate. You've got terrible manners. Good day, sir. But
yeah,
I would have preferred a hearty, you know, fuck you and the horse you rode in on.
Right. Well, what I would do if I was a serious member of the Democratic Party that was in that meeting, it was a leader of the Democratic Party, I would go up and I'd say, well, Mr. President, I'm done here. And I would say, I'm not going to let you sit here and push your lies about people being busted to New Hampshire to vote for, because God forbid anybody vote in a Democrat over a Republican, and that couldn't possibly happen. So it had to be illegal voters in New Hampshire that costed Kelly Ayotte, who was so wishy-washy about Trump, saying that she didn't like him 1 minute, and then saying that she wants her kids or that he's a good influence on kids, and the next minute, and you know, back and forth with all this crap. She was got her ass kicked in the debate against. I'm drawing a blank on the woman that beat her,
Maggie Hassan.
And, you know, so there's reasons why she lost. But, you know, Trump is saying that, oh, well, you know, she would have won if it wasn't for those illegal voters. So why the hell didn't just Democrats say, that is a lie? You're lying. But no, they just sat there, you know? I mean, what the fuck, man? Like, that's why there's a movement, a real movement out there to primary every single one of these bastards to get people who are going to fight. Because I guarantee you, I'm serious, I would have walked out of that meeting and said, I'm not going to let you talk about my colleague like that while you're pushing your lies, your delusional lies. You know, but anyway, we have to start fighting back with some of the same shit they do. They lie like hell. Guess what? We're going to start lying like hell. You know,
well,
I mean?
our buddy, the angry Indian, likes your beat them at their own game, fight them as hard as they fight us point. He said, that's a damn good point. Tell him I said thank you. So you've won the approval of the angry Indian. John,
oh, great. Thanks.
I am going to run along, though. It's a great conversation. I'm glad to hear from you, especially after so long.
Yeah. I was about to say I need to get off here and let somebody else get on there. Hopefully, the angry Indian will call in because I appreciate his kind words. I love when he calls in, so I love listening to your guys' conversations. But well, thanks for taking my call, Bob.
Thanks for making it, John. You take care.
You too.
Bye now.
Feel better.
I'm trying. Thanks. John calling from Central PA. About 4 minutes past the hour, and I can happily say that we are $5 short. Thanks, Colin. We're only $5 short of meeting Brother Deacon Ace's challenge, and we are $55 short of meeting Brother Deacon Ace's challenge and Mike and Cascadia's challenge, which would in turn mean that we've only got $250 more dollars to go in fundraising, but that'd take a big bite out of it. And I thank you very much. Thank you, Colin, for jumping in. Thank you very, very kindly. So hopefully, like, in the next, 55 minutes or so, we'll fill in some of the hole. I ran across, and this kind of dovetails with something John was talking about. It's a story out of the Washington Post from yesterday. Headline, Democrats bracing for town halls protests. Democrats bracing for town hall protests directed at them ask Bernie Sanders for help. Let's just take a moment here. How many of those senators who were of course, all superdelegates, how many of those senators declared for Bernie in the primary? That would be zero. Yes, zero. But so the Indivisible Movement is out there and it's shaking things up. And it's really fun when we get to watch them make life truly miserable for Republicans. But there are groups of frustrated people who apparently also want to vent some ire on some Democratic elected folks, be they representatives or senators. And so there was a high-level meeting of the Democratic Party, the Democratic Senate leadership, I should say, in which they reached out to Bernie and said, listen, can you get these people to get off our asses? Ed O'Keefe and Dave Weigel write at the Post, senior Democratic lawmakers on Tuesday sought to stave off town hall protests from their own party, asking Senator Bernie Sanders to reach out and urge activists to redirect their anger at Republicans instead of at moderate Democratic lawmakers. That word moderate, that's magic. That means mugwump. That means go-along, get-along Democrats. That means Democrats who do things like vote for any of these miserable pieces of shit that Donald Trump has nominated for cabinet positions. The request came in a weekly meeting of top Democratic senators, according to a senator in attendance, ahead of a congressional recess next week when lawmakers in both parties are expected to face large crowds stirred in recent weeks by President Trump's early executive actions and ongoing Republican attempts to revamp the Affordable Care Act. Okay, that's another bullshit word, revamp. There's no revamping. The bastards want to take it away. Okay? Repeal and replace is... It's chimerical. It's a griffin. It's a mythical beast. Because they've had 6 years to replace, to come up with some idea. Bupkis. Because what they want to do is get rid of it altogether and go back to the status quo ante of people just, having to deal with the situation as it is and, go die. But here's the funniest part of the article. Oh, and lo and behold, there's Angry. I'll bring him on in a minute. Protesters have also gathered in blue states, marching to Senate Minority Leader Charles E. Schumer's home in Brooklyn to demand the obstruction of Trump nominees and showing up at the offices of safe seat Democrats to demand that they filibuster Trump's Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch. Is this a bad thing? It's only good if our side is bedeviling Republicans. I got the idea that it's a pretty damn good thing to make sure that Democrats know we're paying attention too. Cause Chuck Schumer can get kind of squishy if he's not very carefully watched, and God knows he would gladly do for just about anybody on Wall Street what Monica did for Bill. Apparently he does not like it. But here's the laugh line, because this is a Lulu. I read this and I had to take a big bite out of the pillow. Such episodes spurred Democrats to ask Sanders for help, according to Senator Joe Manchin III, who attended the meeting on Tuesday. So Joe Manchin is the one who ran to the press to tell this story. That quisling little fuck. They basically explained to Bernie, it looks like you could be the person that could calm down and make sure their energy and all this enthusiasm is directed in all the right proper channels. Bernie has a voice, and if protesters want to be active, then direct them to where the problem may be or where they anticipate a problem. Well, see, that's the thing, Joe. You're the problem. And there's not much chance of us primary and your sorry ass here in West Virginia. So you know what that forces me to do? And you know, I'm telling a lot of people right now, live. It's going to force me to do something I swore I would never, ever, ever, goddamn ever do. Vote for a Republican. If there's no credible primary challenger to Joe Manchin and Joe Manchin emerges unscathed from the primaries next year, I'm already committed to it. I don't care if the Republicans nominate a guy in a clown suit and a pair of overalls carrying a goddamn rifle with the fright wig and the big red nose and a sign about the precious fetuses and scratching his little pointy head and a worrying about where people go potty. I am going to vote for that sorry son of a bitch. Because I want shed of a traitor. Because no Democratic majority that includes Joe Manchin is actually a Democratic majority. If you had a 50-50 split in the United States Senate, Joe Manchin would make it a Republican majority of one. If you had 51 Democrats and 49 Republicans, Joe Manchin would make it a 50-50 split, and Mike Pence could break every goddamn tie. But Joe Manchin wants Bernie to get the progressives off of his ass. Poor baby. You know what? It takes a lot of goddamn gall for Joe Manchin to say something like that after he, and I know as sure as God made little green apples, and if you eat a bunch, you'll get a bellyache and the trots. I know he had a hand in the suppression of the McDowell County town hall that Bernie wanted to hold, that dirty son of a bitch. The request to Sanders came during a meeting with Schumer and a leadership team that stretches the ideological spectrum of his caucus. In addition to Sanders, a self-described socialist, that's beautiful. A self-described socialist? No, he's a democratic socialist. God damn, can you people not get anything right? And the moderate Manchin. Moderate my ass! You can't be a moderate, still call yourself a Democrat, and vote for Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. And you goddamn sure can't vote for Rexon Tillerson and Steve Mnuchin. No! The group included Senators Richard J. Durbin, Patty Murray, Debbie Stabenow, Elizabeth Warren, and Mark Warner, among others. Manchin is among the most imperiled Democrats facing re-election next year, one of five senators from states that Trump won in last year's presidential election. Well, you know what? Progressives in West Virginia are not going to vote for Joe Manchin. It's just that a bunch of them haven't gotten as far as I have. I have realized that the only way to get rid of Joe Manchin is to vote him out by voting the other guy in. Yeah, some people say, oh, it's kind of hypocritical, Bob. No, it isn't. not in the least, because that man has done more to stop every effort we've made to try to protect the people of this state against being fucking poisoned to death than any other member of Congress. You sit in a meeting talking about mountaintop removal with a senator from somewhere way the hell away from Appalachia who happens to be a Democrat, and inevitably the staffer says, well, what did Senator Manchin think? Who gives a damn what Senator Manchin thinks? If Senator Manchin isn't here, if it's a goddamn Republican, they'll quit asking that question. That's very true. Graham points out, Democrats have had a Joe problem for years, from Joe Lieberman to Joe Manchin. Ain't that the damn truth? A little cowbell for you, Graham. Okay, let's go over and check in with the Angry Indian. I wanted to make sure that we got that story in. Hey, Angry.
Hey, my man, what's going on?
Will you forgive me for voting for a Republican next year? Because I'm gonna.
Really? Is that bad?
Yeah, I don't care who runs against Joe Manchin. I'm voting for him. And I'm not going to vote I'm not going to vote for some sparkle fart powered third party goddamn mountain party unicorn fart cavalry candidate. I'm voting for the Republican to make sure that the Republican gets sufficient votes to get that dirty coal brokering little bastard out of my Senate.
Yeah, but what's to make you think that that's not what they want you to do? Seriously.
I don't care what they want me to do. I care what I want me to do.
Yeah, but this is what we got into our disagreement about before. When you don't really have a choice and you're accepting the system as is, accepting the fact that they're doing this and that they have all this power, but there's a hyper-normalization that goes on that says, okay, well, it's nothing beyond this. My argument was about the Sanders campaign in terms of if the fucking rank and file DNC, I'm not talking about Wasserman Schultz or even the Clintons. You know, they own the motherfucking party. But I'm saying if people who, like, you know, the same folks who went out to the airports on the drop of a dime, you know, the same people that are really, you know, fucking stomping and stopping trucks and shit, from taking a lot of these people who have been rounded up, you know, that sort of resistance. If there was that sort of resistance to fight for Bernie that was not on Facebook and Twitter, but was actually out there. And I'm not saying that people were not out there. And that's another thing. In order to be able to have a conversation, we're able to have to generalize a little bit. But, you know, let's just, you know, look at it, you know, fairly. The same, you know, up and down. Because we had just talked about this. You know, a lot of folks were just really afraid. You know, and like I said, I felt that my back was against the wall. I vote for Clinton, who talked about super predators and all this type of shit and laughed about what happened in Libya. And was named by Bertha Caceres, and who was, you know.
Yeah, practically from the grave.
A little bit after she named. Yeah, you know. I mean, that's what I was saying. The Republicans did not mention Bertha Caceres. You know, if they really wanted to get rid of Clinton, they could have talked about that. And that would have done her, you know, way worse than Benghazi or any of that other, you know, the emails, any of that bullshit. You know, if they really wanted to get her. But they didn't give a fuck about Bertha Caceres either. She's just an Indian in South America, you know. So who gives a fuck? You know, she's just in Honduras. She's a woman in Honduras. Who cares? You know, we're picking and choosing, and we're allowing them to pick and choose for us. Now, again, I'm not blaming you or anybody else that, you know, is feeling that you have to be put into these positions where you look at a Democrat. I mean, we can make a joke about, well, in name only, but Joe Manchin has been reelected how many times?
Let's see. He quit being governor to run for... Yeah. This would be his second full re-election.
His second full re-election, right?
Right, because
he's been on the scene for quite a while.
Well, he was governor for a term and a half, and then he quit being governor in order to run for the seat vacated by Robert Byrd when he died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that was supposed to do something for us, you know. Yeah, I'm talking about for everybody. because, you know, the idea that, you know, Robert Byrd, who the far right, the Republicans, love to cite, he was a Klansman. I can't believe you, Hank Benton. You're actually giving Robert Byrd a pass. It's like, well, let me see. Robert Byrd actually admitted to being a Klansman. Robert Byrd actually fucking not only apologized for it, but he fucking hammered Klansmen when he could goddamn do so. And he talked about fucking white people being fucked up, you know, and talked about the society in which makes a white person fucked up in the South. He did this. Strom Thurmond never did any goddamn thing like that.
Damn.
You know, that's a big, you know.
True in every sense.
Go ahead.
No, absolutely true. And apologized. And look, I had my problems with Byrd because Byrd was a lot more conservative than me. But toward the end of his life, he came around to realizing that, among other things, West Virginia was going to have to find a better way. And frankly, had he been a younger man, it might have worked. Who knows? But no, so he died in 2010. Joe ran for his unexpired term and then had to turn around and run in 12. And so he'll be running again for his second full term in 18.
Yeah, and Big Oil loves him, and Big Coal
and
loves
big
him.
Big Gas,
dearly.
And yeah.
Big Gas, you know. So, you know, they all like him. And when it came to Sessions getting on the board, I believe it was, or was it Betty DeVos, one of these goddamn ugly votes. He was the deciding factor, you know.
Well, no, so, he got it right. The only cabinet appointee that he voted against was DeVos. He has voted for every other nominee. He was the only Democrat to vote for Sessions. The only Democrat to vote for, I don't know, he might have been the only Democrat to vote for Mnuchin.
Yeah, I think he was, but I could be wrong about that. But apparently no money from her ever crossed his palm. So, you know, she didn't get that vote.
Right.
It seems like that. It really does. But, you know, your last caller hit on a lot of goddamn spots. And, you know, again, it comes back to common sense. Now, you, I, Brad Blog, David Pakman, that your last caller mentioned, motherfucking, there's a bunch of bloggers, what have you, you know, a few people like Keith Olbermann, what have you, that have talked about this Russia thing. And then you got, I don't know what to call these people now, over at The Intercept. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that can be said about them, too, in terms of their ownership. But The Intercept, you know, the main voice over there, Glenn Greenwald, there's no such thing as this Russia hacking. If you don't believe that, you're a fucking idiot. I think I actually ended up blocking three people who were calling me names because I'm like, this Russia shit is real. They're like,
oh God,
that
angry. That's a thing that I cannot cope with anymore. This Russia can do no wrong. Vladimir Putin's a cuddly, snuggly, you know, Russian bear. And I think if I see the phrase deep state one more time, I'm going to be even sicker at my gut than I already am.
You heard the new rumor?
Oh, which one?
The one that Obama's running as shadow government.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
That's trying to take down.
And I'm sure the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry is positively playing with themselves over that.
Yeah, because, you know, the Jews are really in control of what the fuck is happening, you know.
Right.
It's really happening because, you know. Oh, yeah. And, of course, Netanyahu says nothing. Of course, the Hasbara lobby doesn't say a fucking word. You know, none. All of the smarter these motherfuckers talk, all of the shot in the goddamn fraud, all of it, because I heard you say bookus earlier. You know, because when my mother got mad, she spoke fucking Yiddish. You know, I can't even imagine if she was alive now what the fuck she would say about this. And my parents were conservatives. My parents were fucking conservatives. You know, they were goddamn Eisenhower Democrats, you know. And they totally believed in the United States, even though the racism was slapping us in the face every goddamn day. You know, but it's like, how far do you fucking go with this bullshit? So I'm asking, again, you know, with the Trump thing happening, and of course everything else under that has to goddamn be happening. I mean, Rex Tillerson, you know, somebody's husband asked me a couple of days ago, what do you think about this Rex Tillerson guy? And I'm like, well, what exactly do you mean? He goes, well, he's really, really connected to Russia. And I'm like, I know. And he goes, but none of the Republicans that I know say, have said anything about it. I'm like, yeah, yeah, I know. You know, I mean, I didn't know what to tell him. You know, people asking me for, you know, legitimate news sites and so on. I don't know what to tell them. I don't know what to tell them. Because even if you look at, say, democracynow.org, which I respect, you know, Amy Goodman, but they've had Glenn Greenwald on how many goddamn times? And he's been on that show saying how this Russia thing is no good. But then you got people winding up dead. You have at least one intelligence officer in Russia found dead in his car. You have journalists that have been found dead. You have other people
the guy who was thought to be the contact for the guy who came up with the Trump golden shower dossier. Yeah, he's the one who was found dead in his car. And if you ask the Russians, like, he had heart attack. Was heart failure.
I mean, we already know that could happen because it just happened the other fucking day in Thailand. North Korea's goddamn whoever the fuck is in charge. I can't remember his name. Kim Jong-un, whatever the fuck it is. I'm not trying to diss the Koreans, really. You know, I'm down.
No. I just can't keep up.
I can't.
Baby brother got all dead.
Yeah. I mean, it was just like some James Bond shit out of a 1960s Sean Connery goddamn era fucking film. You know, he's pricked with needles and has a fucking chemical-laced cloth placed across his fucking face, and he drops dead, and these two chicks drop into a fucking taxi. Supposedly, they have one of these women in custody. I haven't read into it yet, but I saw that on the sidebar of a news site. But yeah, you know, what the fuck is going on here? You had the Russian envoy killed by the Turkish fucking off-duty policeman. What the fuck?
I know.
And he's still defending Putin.
Oh, I know.
Didn't even try to save some face and protect himself. You know, and Kelly.
Oh, I got a couple of notes saying, "Good God, did you hear Malloy go off on Robert Perry?" And actually, no, I haven't been up to staying up late listening lately because I haven't felt real well. But, you know, Robert Perry penned this article about how, oh, my God, you know, because Trump didn't stand by Flynn, we're going to miss our golden moment to have detente with the Russians. And I can't get on board with. I mean, I'm real in what I say. No fucking collaboration. No collaboration. And I still use that hashtag. It never caught on, but no collaboration. I will not collaborate with this administration in any way, shape, form, or fashion because I have to answer to myself.
You can't and have a fucking clear conscience. I mean,
if you're out there arguing that somehow Flynn, who, you know, believes in pizza fucking gate, got a raw deal because he was so stupid. He got on a line with an ambassador whose phone calls are always tapped and talked about lifting the goddamn sanctions. Somehow that's him being undermined by the neocons. Oh, well, come here. Works, I got a bridge I want to sell you.
Yeah, but like I said, I am of the mind that these motherfuckers like Richard Spencer do not believe in any of this shit. They put it out there. Now, there are fucking fools who want to believe in something, and they will do this. But why am I saying this? We've talked about this before, and I've written about it. I tried to be a fundamentalist at a couple of points. I tried it with Catholicism. I tried it with Buddhism. I tried it even with socialism. I tried to be fundamentalist. I said, okay, I'm going to just do and I'm going to believe in this. And what I found out was, in order for me to fucking stay in that mind frame, I had to surround myself with people like that. I had to continue to listen to things like that. And, you know, there was a fellow that I got that idea from who was a Seventh-day Adventist, and he would wear headphones while he worked. And he was continually listening to, sermons or whatever the fuck of his belief system. And he told me, he goes, in order for me to zone the rest of you to fuck out, you non-believers, in order to sit with you sinners, he told us one time during lunch, I need to do this. And I started thinking after a while on how many people I knew that did that. And then I thought about, you know, the members of my family that are members of the Nation of Islam who don't really associate with anyone who is outside of the nation. So it's the same thing with any religious, you know, thing. It's not just cults. You know, of course cults do this, but we do this for politics too, not just religion. You know, I mean, you've got a lot of people who do that with their sexuality. If they decide to come out to their coworkers and their family and their friends as bisexual, then they decide to only hang out with people who are openly bisexual or who accept it and what have you. You start to ghettoize yourself, you know, unknowingly. A lot of people do this and don't really realize it. I mean, when I tried to be okay, because I was, you know, born and raised, you know, Catholic. At one point, I was just like, man, I'm so unhappy with my job and, you know, this, that, and the other. If I get back, you know, the partner I had at the time, if I get back into the church, maybe things are straight. And I did that for about several months to realize that it's just a lot of bullshit. That I was talking to priests who flat out told me, they said, look, man, I'm here for the people. I don't give a fuck about this. You know, I don't even think this Jesus bullshit is real. Two priests told me that, Brother Bob. They're like, I don't believe in this. I'm here for the people. The institution, it gives me a way to help people. And there's a lot of humanity that goes on in churches, in mosques, in synagogues, and what have you. And in a lot of ways, that's what religion is about on the social level. It gives a lot of people a reason to be together, to have some, you know, commonality and some communal sense of being. But outside of that, people keep continually telling themselves that God exists and that there's all these rules, and if I step outside the rules, that, you know, my mother's fucking back is going to crack or what have you. We do this to ourselves, because if we don't do this, then the idea that we have to deal with the fucking world, the material world, the way it really fucking is, it's just out. So when, you know, Mr. Obama talked about they go to their Bibles and their guns and they got mad because he struck a fucking nerve.
They got mad because he told the truth.
Truth. They're white people who are angry because they used to be in their own mind any goddamn way. Because, you know, I remember having a quarrel with somebody about maybe a year or two ago where I said, look, be honest with me. You just finished telling me that you and your father and your grandfather actually had the same level of fucking living. And he's like, yeah, I did. I said that. I said, okay then. So no matter what happens in terms of the fucking system here, more than likely you would have maintained that sense of a fucking social level. And I explained to him that, you know, people who are raised by people who have money, it's not just having the material wealth, it's the know-how. I mean, it was a white girlfriend that fucking taught me how to open a bank account. Don't think I'm proud to say that, but that's the reality of shit.
It ain't nothing to be ashamed of.
A lot of fucking black folks. No, but it's the reality. A lot of black people do not know how banks function, you know, because they have to go to the check cashing spot, right?
Well,
you know,
true,
they have to go to to the fucking bank or to the bodega to fucking cash.
Right, or the payday lender, because, right?
You know, yeah. Payday lender. Any goddamn thing, because, you know, banking, what the fuck is that? They don't know anything about that. Somebody had to explain the stock market to me. I just told my wife here a couple of days ago, again, you know, not proud to say this. We were having a discussion. And I said, look, it was a fucking girlfriend's mother who taught me table manners. Which fork is which? How you're supposed to fucking carry yourself? How shit is passed around? Because she's like, if you're going to be with my daughter, then you got to be able to fucking front this. So let's go. And she sat me down and said, this is how you do this, that, and the other. You know, it's not that black people are stupid and have a genetic motherfucking problem, or that Mexicans are stupid and have a genetic fucking problem. We have no access to this bullshit. And then when it's like, well, fuck you, you can't do anything. So then we continue with our own goddamn identity. you know, well, you have a black church. Well, I don't have a white church. Well, you never needed a white fucking church. You know, and then
they
we
were white by default.
By default. But you can't tell the alt-right this shit because they're supposed to have every goddamn thing. They look at television and they see black people who have more money than they do, and they say, well, fuck, that's supposed to be me. You know, even though that doesn't reflect any fucking reality out here. You know, same thing when I try to explain to a lot of black folks. They're like, oh, man, white people got everything. I said, no, man. Have you motherfuckers ever been to West Virginia? Because I have. I've been in your neck of the woods a couple of times. But, you know, if you've never been out there and all you know is what you see on television, you know, everybody looks like, you know, any well-dressed white dude or, you know, woman or what have you. You know, it's a falsehood that a lot of us are led to because of what we have access to. You know, if we were more like Europeans in terms of turning off the fucking televisions, reading more goddamn books, asking more fucking questions, having print newspapers instead of having the majority of news transmitted now electronically, where the majority of fucking Native Americans don't even have phone service, landlines. You know, there used to be more than fucking 1,000 newspapers in the United States. Am I wrong about that number?
No. Probably more than that.
More than that, probably. Yeah.
Well, I mean, every town had a paper.
What to say?
Every town had a paper.
Every ethnic group in that town had a paper.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I mean, in Philly, we had newsstands all over the goddamn place for every ethnic group. Italian papers, Greek fucking papers, Russian fucking language papers. You know, my schoolmates used to get the fucking newspapers in their particular language, and we would talk about it, you know, in school. I'm talking about when I was in grade school. You know, they say, yeah, well, you know, we got this, that, and going on. It's, you know, I got a sense that the world doesn't revolve around my fucking community. The world doesn't revolve around me. But when you talk to a lot of Republicans, and I'm saying this about people right here in fucking Portland, goddamn Oregon, USA. I'm like, hey, man, what would you ever want to go to Paris? To Paris? No. Why not? What I want to go there for? What do they have over there I can't get here? I'm like, well, besides quiche and croissants, and crepes, I don't know. You know? But I'm like, just to see another part of the world. You know? No, I wouldn't want to go anywhere. How about South America?
No. See, that's
to find out that there's more.
during the roundups and everything, I noticed that MSNBC has sent a correspondent to Mexico City. And, you know, I know there's a world down there. One of the other channels on my DirecTV now, a couple of them, as a matter of fact, always have a Mexican soap opera on. I think I've decided I'm going to try to learn Spanish by watching Mexican soap operas. Probably not.
That's how I did.
No, you can understand how that might be a problem. I'd wind up insulting someone desperately, but. In the coverage down there in Mexico City, I've never been there. I'd love to go. But I know intellectually what a beautiful place or what beautiful places exist in the Valley of Mexico. I also know there's, you know, some pretty earth-shattering poverty. But these Trumpanzees who are all, you know, all worked up about Mexican rapists and everything, I don't know what they imagine is south of the border. You know, obviously, the U.S.-Mexican border is mostly desert, right?
Well, pretty much. I mean, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's not... It ain't no jungle. But I have a feeling that most of ignorant Trumpansy America just think that there's a desert that starts at the American border that goes all the way to Tierra del Fuego, and that what ain't well, and that what isn't desert is jungle. They can't conceive of you know, they can't conceive of civilization existing there. When in fact that civilization at its root is far older than anything that the Europeans brought. That's fact. Well, and then I turn on my Spanish language TV and the breaks in between the soap opera, you know, son of a bitch, it just shows, you know, it shows ordinary everyday Mexican people sitting around in living rooms that look nicer than mine. You know, because it's advertising. And they're being encouraged to reduce their insurance rates by going with Geico or some shit. I mean, all the same products.
Well, yeah, but that's the same.
I mean, it's the same capitalism.
Somewhat. Well, yeah, but there's differences, though.
Or the same consumerism,
there's
maybe.
There's similarities at the same time. Well, there's that. I mean, you have Sábado Gigante con Don Francisco. I mean, this is the oldest running television show in television fucking history, period. He's actually a Jew from Germany who his family escaped from Hitler in the 30s and shit and wound up in Chile. And he flies to, you know, Frank, I don't even know if the show's still on because it's been a long time since I've seen it. He would fly to Mexico to film this every Sunday. And it's a variety show and it's really fun. But it's the old thing where they would sing and dance and have a jingle for each, you know, every product and so on, you know, very 50s to us, but very typical in many senses for the media. But two, at the same time, there's some differences. Now, we complain about sexism up here, or at least we're starting to have that discussion. I mean, I don't know how much Spanish language media you've seen or media from Brazil, but sexism is completely turned on its head in terms of that argument. I mean, they have best ass contests that are on prime time in Brazil and in Chile in Colombia especially, where that's socialism of itself.
The comparison between, say, Brazil and Argentina, for instance, two countries, you know, two countries, two languages, and two radically different cultures. Because of the way the colonialism worked out, but the Portuguese versus the Spanish.
Exactly. Yeah, because when you watch the novellas, when you do see an Indio, when you do see a Negro, you know, they're either playing the uniformed police officer, or they're playing the bad guy, or she's the maid, right? Or he's the butler, or he's the magic Negro who is the backup to the good guy, who's going against the bad guy because he's in love with the bad guy's wife, and the bad guy's been murdering people all over the fucking place. And, you know, there's been this schism, and it goes on for like 6 or 7 weeks, and then they start a whole new novella. You know, it's not like The Guy in Light and, you know, As the World Turns and all that kind of shit, where, you know, it's the same fucking cast forever.
Oh, yeah, and Ron and Raleigh wanted you to know that Sabato went off at the end of 2016. That was the end of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, I'm going to miss that show, actually. When I got... No, seriously, I got used to it. I got used to Arroz con Leche. I got used to watching Sábado Gigante on fucking Saturday. I got used to watching these fucking novellas, Brasil Me Frete, because of the person I was with at the time. And, you know, everything was silencio, you know, shut the fuck up. I'm watching the goddamn novella, you know, and it's like you sit there and it was, that's how I learned Spanish.
Yeah. Right. And the same thing obtains all over redneck America. Hey, shut up. I'm watching my stories. That's how they're referred to around here and down south. Little old blue haired ladies and what? Well, I got to go home because my story's coming on. I mean, that's almost a direct one-to-one translation from novella to story. Yeah, got to watch my stories. And it was not said to me in Spanish, but shut up, my story is on, is something I have heard in my life, angry.
Yeah. Well, most of us who have been married you know, had. That's a fucking point or another. You know, I mean, my mother watched it, so I looked at it with her every now and again. You know, as when I visited, just that's it's a thing. I mean, but what do novellas? What did the soap opera sell? You know, a bullshit version of what the middle class or the upper middle classes, you know, their trials, their tribulations. They're not able to find people who love them. They're not able to fucking be able to, you know, get along with their children, all that kind of shit. In the meantime, you're having a hard time paying your fucking bills. You're having a hard time getting your kids' teeth fixed. You're having a hard fucking time getting justice on your work site. You're having a hard time being represented by your motherfucking supposed elected representatives, much less the commander in chief. You know, the soap operas, just like Sunday football and basketball and the rest of it, is to draw your attention away from what the fuck is happening. You know, somebody explained to me one time, the whole point of the word amusement is that, you know, with the A, it removes, right? So you're not musing. You're not thinking about any goddamn thing. You know, people who, I mean, you and I both have known people who are really, really into sports. They have the official team baseball cap. They have the official team jacket. They got all the posters. They got fucking pillow sheets, you know, fucking comforters, cups, mugs, you know, with their favorite team and all this kind of shit. Ask them who the fuck their mayor is. They can't tell you.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, that's dangerous. You know, the Greeks and the Romans were very clear about this. When you don't pay attention to these things, you know, or as the French would say, you know, I don't remember how it is in French, but those who do not do politics get done. You know, it doesn't mean you have to be, I mean, you know, you and I are political people. I would say Malloy's political person, you know, the cat behind Brad Black, you know, any number of people out there that are doing alternative radio, myself. But at the same fucking time, you know, the average person does not need to be like that. I mean, when I have conversations with my European-born friends who have married Americans and have stayed here, it is much easier to have a conversation about what's happening without it necessarily becoming a full-on political conversation. They're much more well-versed. They consider what the fuck is going on. They read, you know, the European press first before they read the local news. And then I'll talk to somebody American, you know, regardless of background. And it's really, really fucking difficult. The majority of people consider themselves Democrats can't tell you anything about the DNC.
No, but there's an equally there's an equal problem that there are a lot of people who will opine freely about the DNC who don't know shit from Shinola what it is.
Yeah,
it's yeah. You know based on the previous electoral cycle, there are a lot of people who think the DNC is this the giant tentacled operation that operates in a building that looks a lot like, you know, Barad-dûr in Mordor, you know, with the big fucking eye at the top of it, and it's the eye of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, of course, or maybe Donna Brazile now, and that it moves people around like pawns on a chessboard. Well, that ain't true. In between elections, it's barely much of anything at all, other than a direct mail, an email, an occasional telephone fundraising operation.
No, see, the DNC isn't serious. I mean, what's been happening here with Kellyanne Conway? She's been pushing this Bowling Green massacre that didn't happen. So you fucking hammer her on this. Then you got Spice defending her on this, and then he comes up with a Virginia attack that never happened. Oh, I really meant Orlando. I'm not sure, but you have to believe me.
No, didn't he say Orlando or Atlanto? He was trying to say Atlanta at the same time he said Orlando. It was a stunning little piece of audio. I really should have run it.
Yeah, because he got caught, you know. And he flustered.
Well, the thing is, they're all caught. I mean, the idea that they're floating this and it's getting some legs because the loyal Trumpanzees in the House are spreading it as well. Well, you know, I don't think the problem is so much what General Flynn did as it was the leaks. The leaks are the problem.
Yeah, he's trying to deflect. Yeah, well, I mean, he's been doing that. Like, when they released that list of terrorist attacks that supposedly were totally underreported, it turns out that, you know, of course, anybody who fucking would take the goddamn time with a pot of fucking coffee and a notebook to sit there with their computer and look up these goddamn attacks would find out they were all goddamn reported. You know, they were all fucking reported. The goddamn reporters were online, at least on Twitter, saying we got one of them. He said we got a fucking Pulitzer for what the fuck he said was under goddamn reported. But at the same time, the Quebec massacre, nothing. Not one. One Republican has said a fucking thing. And Sean Duffy, if anything, when he was questioned about this, and I can't remember who it was, but I think it was CNN, he said some bullshit about, oh, well, you know, white terrorism is not the same as Islamic terrorism, that Islamic terrorism is worse. Because the commentator was saying, well, look, you know, 97%, because that's the number, 97% of the fucking terrorist attacks in the United States that have occurred since 2001 have been white supremacists, Christian, whatever the fuck, and he just totally, yeah, well, you know, that might be true, but it's still not as bad as Islamic terrorism. You know, some shit about, well, this is a foreign entity, so that makes it worse. So even though that's the slightest goddamn thing we really have to fucking worry about, that's the main thing we need to fucking be focused on. So, you know, it's you know, I mean, we can continue to say that it's crazy until we're blue in the face. But, you know, my argument, again, still stands. If the fucking DNC is fucking serious, if the people who make up the rank and file, remember, I'm speaking as one of those old-time fucking lefties, right? If the people were fucking serious, they'd be hammering the goddamn DNC to hammer the fucking RNC on the fucking fact that Kelly Conway is a fucking liar, that Sean Spicer is fucking lying.
Yeah, and well, from the how bad does it... Yeah, from the how bad does it have to get department, I read the official statement of Mika Brzezinski, hard-hitting journalist, earlier today, where she said, Kellyanne Conway ain't coming back. She emails us constantly. We're not going to allow her back on Morning Joe.
Yeah. Well, they're at the face-saving stage because they got to look like they have some kind of fucking integrity, even though they've been pushing all of this and defending all of this. All we have to do, again, sit there with a pot of coffee and a notebook, and just, you know, whatever search engine you choose, and sit there and go through and see what the fuck they've been saying. You also got the archive. I mean, goddamn, you can't lie any fucking more. You can't lie any fucking more. But they're going on, and then they come up with this alternative facts bullshit. There's enough to impeach this entire fucking administration if the DNC got off his goddamn and stop letting fucking Nancy Pelosi talk about, well, impeachment. Well, the first time I said it was off the table. This time I'm saying, well, it's just a waste of time.
I heard the actual audio, Angry. She said he ain't committed an impeachable act yet. And like I said, like I said before,
he's lied to the American public about a fucking...
Yeah, but it only lying to the American people only matters if you're a Democrat, okay? I mean, that's the practical reality of it.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this much.
That's what I said.
I mean, I don't have the resources or necessarily the skills to suss this out. But the bottom there are a couple of rules-based realities. Generally, any bill has to go through committee before it gets to the floor in either house, okay? But there's a thing called a discharge petition. And a discharge petition is used to get a bill out of committee and get it a vote on the House floor without all the committee folderol. And I've been thinking about that because... Again, there are, maybe my number's off by two or three, but there are 192 Democrats in the House of varying degree of Democratness. Obviously, there's a Republican majority, but it is not that great a majority. If the Democrats could pick up, could maintain all their seats and pick up 13 more in 2018, they'd have a majority. But that's not what I'm going for. What would happen if you could identify and get, say, 26 Republicans to go along with you? Well, that would be a sufficient majority to vote for impeachment. Okay?
Yeah, but they would do that on the basis of what, though?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, the only time we've ever seen a Republican do anything like that is when they didn't have to worry about re-election.
Well, there are 400.
They will offer something there, else.
There are, I believe, 435 members of the House. Does that sound right?
I don't know exactly.
Yeah, there's 435 members. There are 239 in the majority and 192 in the minority. Now, let's see, 218. 218 members are enough for a discharge petition, which would get it to the floor, all right? And that could get an up or down vote on impeachment, straight up, plain and simple. But with 239 Republicans and 192 Democrats, that's not like 40 Democrats, okay? You want to impeach this guy, start with the 192, and then do the homework, and I'm not telling you to do it, you understand. Then do the homework to find and cull from the herd, you know, 20, 21 Republicans. And you can have it.
But who's really willing to do that?
Right now, I think the obvious answer is no one. But it ain't going to get. But it ain't going to get better. Angry. It's going to get worse.
Oh, I already know that. But I can't see that happening for a hell of a lot of goddamn reasons. You know, one. You know. Majority of these cats are really liking their little taste of power right now, so they're not giving that up. Trump gives that to them. The only ones that are really concerned are those that have some sort of like, okay, if this continues to go on, it's going to go completely off the goddamn rails, and we're not going to be able to fix anything. Those are the only people that are concerned, but they're being drowned out. I mean, I'm hearing people talk about Ari Fleischer as a motherfucker. I'm like, wait a minute, I thought you loved him.
Yeah. Oh no, man. He's talking about Trump being, he's going to make America great again.
So, you know, it's like, look, I hear you. But until there's public anger about this, and I'm not talking about violence, I'm saying until there's public anger about this, the same sort of fury we saw these goddamn airports on the drop of a dime, and somebody really fucking comes up with something concrete. I mean, first off, we know that if anybody comes up with anything goddamn concrete, it's going to get crushed, which is what everybody's worried about. Everybody saw what the fuck happened to Occupy. That's another discussion we need to fucking have.
Well, and so ancillary to that, if you want to learn just the evil that beats in the chest of Steve Bannon. What was it, 2011, he did a documentary about Occupy. It was called Occupy Exposed. Don't spend any money on it, but go find it and watch it, and you probably won't sleep for a couple of days.
Why?
Because it's Bannon's world vision writ large. He wants another world war. He's not just, you know, certainly we should be prepared. No, he wants one. That's why he gets such a nasty little 65-year-old alcoholic stiffy at the thought of a war with China in the South China Sea. Because he buys into this pop historical theory that says that there are great turning points in human history, usually brought about by massive conflicts, and that in those moments everything gets changed forever. He wants a world war.
War. Well, I mean, a lot of it, if we're to believe what we're being told, is just simply his ego business wanting to be a big man. I mean, who was it? Joe Scarborough, of all people. Morning Joe talking about it. He said three times in a meeting, we have nukes. Why can't we use them? If we have nukes, why can't we use them? You know, so, I mean, he's admitted that he was sent to military school because his parents couldn't control him. He was beating the shit out of his fucking, the people in his neighborhood. Then, you know, supposedly it's on record that he was beating the fuck out of people when he was in military school because he was a big kid. He was bigger than the others. So, I mean, you know, we're looking at this sort of mentality. I will do what the fuck I want. You know, I mean, he's admitted to pussy grabbing. He's admitted to all this bullshit.
No, but Bannon, you know, nothing can be done. But Bannon
can correct him.
But Bannon himself is an ideologue. And he's got hands on levers, and he wants that third world war. Angry, I got to get out of here because we are plumb out of time. But it's been a great conversation, my friend.
All right, my man. Be polite, everybody. If you can, please help keep the show on the air. Peace.
Thanks. See you, Angry. And before we go out the door, thanks, big time thanks to TK. TK just took care of Mike and Cascadia's challenge and went so far as to get us $70 down the road. So that's so that only leaves it at 180, so that means that tomorrow's fundraising goal is only 380. We're making progress. Thanks, everybody. Have a great evening. Take care. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.